Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From Lower Manhattan, the center of the financial world, this is Money Talking from WNYC. Good morning. I'm Jeff Greenfield, joined today by our regular contributor, Joe Nocera of the New York Times, and Megan McArdle with Newsweek. Heads are rolling at Barclays Bank, and elected officials and regulators want to know who else is rigging a key interest rate, and we want to know how might it affect you. This all has to do with LIBOR, or London Interbank Offered Rate. That's an interest rate that banks charge when they borrow from each other. And it matters because by some estimates, about $800 trillion, that is trillion with a T, in loans, securities, and other contracts are tied to it. Like that adjustable rate mortgage you have? If LIBOR goes up, so could your monthly payments. Same for many credit cards or car loans. Joe Nocera, walk us through what's happened so far.
Well, so far, Barclays has admitted to manipulating this key interest rate since 2005. Between 2005 and 2009, they've paid a huge fine. The chairman and the CEO lost their jobs. At least a half a dozen and maybe more banks are still under investigation. And it looks like the entire big banking system, the too big to fail banking system, was quietly behind the scenes manipulating this rate, first for their own profit so that the swaps dealers, their derivative traders, could make a little extra profit. And then, as we got into the financial crisis, they were manipulating it to make themselves look healthier than they actually were.
J.P. Morgan made headlines when it lost originally $2 billion, estimates now say up to $9 billion, mostly of their own money. Compare this in terms of its mega impact to the J.P. Morgan deal. How big a deal is this?
It actually is a very big deal. In some ways, it's a bigger deal because it's a form of collusion between all the different banks, and everybody was doing it. It suggests that bankers remain above the law, that they play by their own rules. It hasn't been as big a deal here, in a sense, because the huge J.P. Morgan loss kind of took the steam out of everybody in terms of scandals. But over in London and in England, this is the biggest banking scandal, really, since the crisis.
Well, Megan, if banks are manipulating this rate, let me go back to the question I raised at the outset. How does it wind up affecting us, average consumers?
Well, the sort of irony of all of this is that for some consumers, this was actually a benefit because a lot of loans, particularly subprime loans, ended up being pegged to LIBOR. The adjustable rate, you know, they say it's LIBOR or the prime rate plus some percentage point is often how those rates are set. And so, in fact, keeping it low meant that some people with adjustable rate mortgages ended up paying a little less on their mortgages than they otherwise would have. But I think the broader problem is that it undermines trust in banks. And given that trust in the banking system is not exactly at record highs already, that's a really big issue for consumers who think about, where am I putting my money? Well, am I going to put my money with someone who will go out and manipulate interest rates in order to raise their profits? I'm a little concerned.
Well, there's one other part about this, Megan. At the time, as Joe mentioned, of the financial crisis, these rates were being perhaps artificially pegged low to preserve a sense of stability, to avoid panic. So let me ask you, if you were in a position to lie if it could stabilize the global economy during a crisis, would you do it?
Oh, that is a tough question. I mean, I think that you look back at things that did happen during the financial crisis that I support. For example, the government stepping in to stabilize the money market when it was basically experiencing a massive bank run. In that sort of situation, would I say, if I were the central banker, overstep my authority a little bit? I probably would. I think lying takes it to a different level. You know, fooling not merely consumers, but the regulators who are supposed to be the people who are watching the system and making sure that it doesn't get out of hand. So on the one hand, you can say it kept markets from panicking. On the other hand, you could say it kept regulators from realizing what was going on until later. And that's a huge problem.
Well, while Barclays is likely to be in the headlines over the next couple of days, one thing we know will be in the headlines tomorrow, the latest unemployment report. It's the biggest economic story until next month's. But trying to get a fix on the economy from numbers gets you in a lot of different places. Housing looks good. Manufacturing looks not so good. Jobs numbers might be all over the place. So, Joe Nocera, what do you use as a measure for judging the overall health of the economy?
Well, housing starts are certainly important because historically that has always led recoveries. Manufacturing, not quite as important as it used to be just because it doesn't generate the jobs it used to be. But I would say jobs are the most important barometer right now. The president is going to be judged on how many jobs are coming back and his opponent, Mitt Romney, is going to criticize him on the same basis.
Megan, what about you?
Well, you know, there's all sorts of unconventional leading indicators. I think my favorite is Alan Greenspan's men's underwear index, which on the grounds that, you know, when guys start cutting back on their underwear replacement, you know it has to be pretty bad. You know, I honestly think that jobs is the leading indicator we should care about, because for the felt experience of the economy, for human welfare, that is the most important thing that's happening. You know, GDP can be inflated by, say, a financial bubble, but you don't end up with people with five jobs. Everyone gets one job. It's the key to financial security. It's the key to feeling connected to your community. The loss of self-esteem when people are unemployed, and worse, the loss of human capital, because people who get disconnected from the labor force, their skills atrophy frighteningly quickly. They get depressed, and it can have lasting impacts that go for 10, 20, 30 years down the line.
Let's look ahead to next week, as we always do. Megan, what is on your radar for the coming week?
Well, the main thing that I'm still watching is what is happening since the healthcare ruling last week. Projecting forward, we're looking at which states are going to say that they're opting out of the Medicare expansion. Now we're starting the rule writing process that has been going on so far, but a lot of people have been holding back from, say, implementing exchanges.
Yay. Joe?
Well, as you may recall, right around the time that Facebook was preparing to go public, the word came out that General Motors was pulling all its advertising from Facebook. Now rumors are surfacing, and they've made it to the newspapers, that Facebook and General Motors are playing footsie again. And there seems to me a likelihood that they may reengage and General Motors might start advertising on Facebook again. Why is this a big deal? Because for all the hundreds of millions of people who are on Facebook, it is still struggling to find a business model that will truly make it mega profitable the way everybody expects it to be.
We will be watching those stories and all of the week's financial news at WNYC.org/business. You can also take this program with you as a podcast, available at no charge on iTunes. I'm Jeff Greenfield. This is Money Talking from WNYC. Thank you for listening.